When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, does he fake that drawl or merely nod? Agree which convicts should be killed, where prisons should be built and filled? Which voter fraud must be concealed when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, I wonder which one plays the better cop. We should find some jobs, the ghetto's broke. No, they're lazy, George, I say we don't. Just give them more liquor stores and dirty coke. That's what God recommends. When the president talks to God, do they drink near beer and go play golf? While they pick which countries to invade, which Muslim souls still can be saved? I guess God just calls a spade when the president talks to God. When the president talks to God, does he ever think that maybe he's not? That voice is just inside his head when he kneels next to the presidential bed? Does he ever smell his own bullshit when the president talks to God? I doubt it. I doubt it.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Okay. I think we're working again. Yay. Boy, you know, here's what happened. I played a pre-show set of music all about God, really about not believing in God. And all of a sudden I come on, my microphone did not work. Everything was overmodulated. I really didn't mess with the settings at all. Some supernatural power just came in and screwed with me. Anyway, we're here. Welcome to it. It is a Wednesday. We're still waiting on the score from the Congressional Budget Office on the new Trump Care, you know, Trump Care 2.0. Yeah, sound is better, right? And yeah, because I was screwing up with, I was messing around with the God songs. That's what did it. All right. I do want to share with you, I've been on CBO Score Watch. And let me see if I can't find it. Ever since I was messing around trying to find the trying to fix the problems with my soundboard here, I lost everything I wanted to do. Ian Millhiser over at Think Progress did a great little 10 or 11 tweet primer. Here's what he wrote. I want to share this with you because we're waiting for the CBO score. He writes, "So since we're all in CBO limbo, I might as well do a tweet storm about why the CBO report may look better for the GOP than it really is." He writes, recall that the first CBO report said that Trump care will cost about 24 million people health care by the end of the decade. The biggest change in Trump care 2.0, he writes, is that it makes it easier for many insurers to take coverage from people with pre-existing conditions. That's likely to have two effects, he writes. It'll push the least healthy people out of the market and potentially lower the cost of insurance for the healthiest people because insurers no longer have to pay for so many sick people. Lower premiums for healthy people might bring more people into the insurance market than will lose it due to pre-existing conditions. So it is possible, writes Ian Millhiser, though not certain, that CBO will say Trump Care 2.0 will lead to fewer than 24 million losing insurance. That's not necessarily a good thing because it could mean lots of people who need insurance, hello, the most, losing it. He continues, while some people who may not need it wind up becoming insured, but the top line number could look better for the GOP for Trump Care 2.0 than it did for Trump Care 1.0. And if it does, expect Ryan, McConnell, etc. to claim that they are, quote, making progress or something daft like that. So there you go. Ian Millhiser with a bit of a preemptive strike on the Congressional Budget Office score on Trump Care 2.0 that is expected out this afternoon. Jonathan Cohn writes, it could be as early as 3 p.m., as late as 5 p.m., depending on assumptions. So we'll see. It may happen after I leave the air, in which case, you know, I'll bring you all the info tomorrow. Today, in case you're wondering, we were sideswiped by divine intervention, I suppose, played a whole bunch of God songs and things like XTC's Dear God, Ben Folds' Jesus Land, Hozier, Take Me to Church, Tori Amos' God. God, sometimes you just don't come through. Do you need a woman to look after you? So I did at least a half hour's worth of music there. And again, then when I went to turn on the microphone, we just had noise. The reason for all the God songs is, twofold. One, the events of the last few days where Donald Trump, possibly the most, I don't think Barack Obama was a religious man either, but Donald Trump, in this case, in lack of religion, probably gives Obama a run for his money. And not that I think there's anything wrong with that. I do not have organized religion in my life. I'm really opposed to it. And our guest today is as well. I'll get to him in a moment. So anyway, Trump was at the Vatican early this morning. Early this morning, U.S. time, East Coast time. I guess it was, I lose track, Wednesday afternoon in Rome. He went and visited the Pope. And his visit with the Pope came after visits to Israel and Saudi Arabia, where he in Israel visited the Western Wall, some of the most holy sites in Israel, in the Middle East altogether. He went to Saudi Arabia. He delivered a speech on Islam, which of all people, for anybody in the world to deliver such a speech, he's the last one who should. And so when I saw that this was on Trump's itinerary, visiting, as Stephen Colbert tells us, you know, the holiest of lands for the world's three major religions, I thought, who would I most like to speak with? And the name Frank Schaeffer came up. If you're not familiar with Frank Schaeffer, you will be after today's show. Frank Schaeffer, and look, this is coming from an atheist Jew. I grew up in a very secular Jewish household, so with very little religious training. In fact, I do say, and it's true, that my religious schooling came from watching the Ten Commandments on TV one year at Passover. That's as much religious education as I ever got. So, but we were Jewish by tradition, although we did have we got Santa Claus brought us presents. We got like maybe one Hanukkah gift, and Santa brought us presents. Again, I came from a very secular household. But again, so I wasn't real familiar with who Frank Schaeffer's father was, but his name was Francis Schaeffer. He was one of the founders of the religious right. And I'm going to let, I'm really going to let Frank tell you the story because I'll screw it up. But Frank wrote about it in his autobiography called Crazy for God. The full title is Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. I first heard of him, God, it's got to be seven or eight years ago already. And I've had the honor of hosting him on my program easily as many times over the years. And he has, you know, he was right there alongside his father, alongside of Jerry Falwell and all the, you know, the big names in the religious right. You name them, he was part of that world. And he came out on the other side. In fact, I called Frank or I sent him a message a couple of days ago knowing what Trump's itinerary was and asked him if he would join me on the show today. Just to get his take on how these religious fundamentalists went about helping to elect Donald Trump. The hypocrisy in these people, and it really, it came to a head for me as I was watching, as we were, if you turned on cable news, you were almost forced to watch Trump's commencement speech at Liberty University. And I stumble over the words because Liberty University, to my mind, is as much a university as Trump University was. It's a religious institution that, you know, I guess doesn't believe in science. I do have disdain for organized religion. That's why God smited me with equipment problems today. Yeah, if you believe that. Anyway, so Frank Schaefer is coming up in a little while, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to save all the good stuff for him. But before we get to Frank, I figured I would update you on a few stories that we talked about here in recent days and weeks. You might recall the story. We didn't do a Florida thing that day, but I did tell you the story of the man in Margate, which is a next town over from me. There are a lot of next towns over where I live. One of the next towns over, who, well, he was charged with murder. And when he was in the courtroom, he asked to show his penis to the jury in an effort to prove that his girlfriend choked to death on it during oral sex, right? That was his defense. Well, the man has been acquitted of second-degree murder charges. Divine intervention again, I guess. Jurors deliberated for 5 hours before finding Richard Patterson, 65, not guilty in the slaying of Francisca Martinez. Prosecutors said Patterson strangled her during or after sex, but an autopsy showed no bone or cartilage damage to her neck. Now, the defense's oral sex choking defense was proven either, wasn't proven. This is written horribly. After experts say Martinez's airway would have had to have been obstructed for 30 straight seconds. Her official cause of death is listed as undetermined. So without a cause of death, the jurors didn't have the evidence to convict the guy. So he got off. So there's that. The other story is a bit more important. As you know, the FCC has not been the friendliest lately. We have a new leadership, Ajit Pai, I believe is his name, or Ajit Pai, something like that, is the new chair of the FCC, and he wants to do away with net neutrality rules. He wants to open it up so that there will be, you know, a high speed, high cost lane. So, you know, the technical problems I had today will be nothing compared with what they could do to me in the future. They could really slow me down. So, you know, the buffering we get on YouTube sometimes. Yeah. That would likely be all the time. So hopefully you've weighed in on that. Well, our pal Stephen Colbert, who has been just doing such a great job in pushing back on the Trump effect, a couple of weeks ago made a joke. And his joke was obviously, it was a series of jokes that were directed at taking down Trump because Trump dissed his friend John Dickerson. No joke there. Just that's really his name. John Dickerson, the host of Face the Nation. And you'll remember Donald Trump sat for an interview with him, right? For CBS. And Trump was so rude to him. And he even said, yeah, you know, you're part of the fake news. I call it deface the nation. And so Colbert, he took offense to that because, you know, it's the CBS family. That's where he lives. That's where he works. And he didn't take too kindly to it. So he let loose with a slew of insult jokes to get back at Trump for taking a swipe at his friend John Dickerson.
Mr. Trump, your presidency, I love your presidency. I call it disgrace the nation. You're not the POTUS, you're the BLOTUS. You're the glutton with the button. You're a regular gorge Washington. You're the president, but you're turning into a real pricktator.
Ooh, that wasn't the one that got him, though. Nope.
You attract more skinheads than free Rogaine. You have
like
more
that?
People marching against you than cancer. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Okay, that was the joke. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's cock holster. Again, it was bleeped because it's on television, but that's what he said. And that's what got people's hankles in a shankle or something. It got small-minded people all pissed off. Well, following that cock holster joke, the FCC received more than 5,000 complaints. And you know the way these complaints happen. Somebody put it out on Facebook and they got all their people to write to the FCC to complain about it with concerns over indecency and hate speech and other objections. Well, today the FCC weighed in and they let it be known that no action will be taken against either Stephen Colbert or The Late Show, or CBS. Here's the statement. Consistent with standard operating procedure, the FCC's Enforcement Bureau has received the complaints and the material that was the subject of those complaints. The Bureau has concluded that there was nothing actionable under FCC rules. Isn't that good? That is good. All right, so there's that. There's one more thing I wanted to play for you because I didn't have the audio yesterday. Yesterday, we talked a bit about Trump's 2018 budget, that horrendous budget that cuts the safety net for the poor people, for the elderly, cuts cancer research, it cuts Meals on Wheels, it completely eliminates the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts, among other things. Here's what Mick Mulvaney, he's the budget director, what he said about it.
We looked at this budget through the eyes of the people who were actually paying the bills. Compassion needs to be on both sides of that equation. Yes, you have to have compassion for folks who are receiving the federal funds, but also you have to have compassion for the folks who are paying it.
Really?
We're not going to measure compassion by the amount of money that we spend, but by the number of people that we help.
Ew. First of all, by knocking all those people off of their support programs, you're not helping them. Second of all, Mick Mulvaney, this budget would give the top 1% each about a $50,000 a year tax break, while people like you and I will get totally screwed. So we haven't done it in a while. I thought it was time to sing a song for Mick Mulvaney.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 His name is
Mick Mulvaney.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I feel better now. All right, you ready to talk God? All right, we're going to get, finally the FCC did something right? So I needed to share that. I should have played the good news sounder. It was good news for once we get to have some good news. All right, I'm going to call Frank Schaefer. Frank Schaefer is the author of so many books. Oh, I didn't even get a slide for him. Man, I'm just so out of it lately. I apologize. I'll put something up while we're talking. So Frank Schaefer, the author of dozens of books, screenplays. He's an artist. I know he's expecting our call.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 9.
Okay, no, we're not going to do that. All right, I'm going to let me try his other line and see if that will help. I know he's expecting my call. Let's try this line and see if this one works. You know, it just figures this is going to be one of those days. So he's the author of Sex, Mom, and Dad, and God. Sorry, Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. Again, Crazy for God. I should have written to him.
No.
All right. So I don't know what we're going to do. I've got to find, you know what? Maybe I can try him. This is the story of my life. I'm going to open up the phone lines because I don't know where Frank Schaefer is. I already played What's News. I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to do the Green News Report. And what's today's date? The 23rd. I'm so all over the place. I really apologize. Give me one moment. We'll play the Green News Report. I'm going to try to raise Frank Schaefer and get him on the line. And hopefully we will still have a show today. If not, I'm going to hold on a second. All right. We'll take a break and hopefully be right back. Best laid plans.
It's Tuesday, May 23, 2017.
Apparently, even the most advanced apocalypse bunkers aren't safe from climate change.
Global seed vault flooded by melting permafrost. Antarctica is going green,
Allison,
and not in a good way. Plus, Trump's final budget proposal takes a hatchet to the environment.
All of that slashing and burning straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Trump gave another commencement speech, this time at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy.
I've loosened up the strangling environmental chains wrapped around our country and our economy.
Yes, he's loosened the strangling environmental chains around America, especially those chains about global warming, which is good news for the Coast Guard, because soon they'll be able to patrol the coast of Kansas.
Semper Paratus, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we are just getting details now, but the White House has put forward its final budget proposal to Congress, and boy, oh boy, does the EPA get slashed and burnt.
Yep. President Trump's final budget proposal, released on Tuesday, as expected, saves its biggest cuts for the research and enforcement budget of the Environmental Protection Agency. It cuts the agency's budget by 31%, eliminates more than 3,000 EPA staff jobs, that's about 20% of its workforce, and eliminates 50 climate research programs. The budget slashes funding for Superfund cleanup sites and proposes selling half of the oil in the nation's strategic petroleum reserve to raise revenue. Now, that's a proposal that's likely to get very strong bipartisan resistance from Congress, because most of them say that that kind of move would threaten national security.
Yeah, it sure would. He wants to sell off half of the strategic oil. I mean, this is what we use in the event of an attack and in the event that we can't.
In times of war and in times of natural disaster.
So he wants to sell that off, and I suspect at some point we'll have to start filling it up and buying that oil at higher prices, perhaps, than we bought it for in the first place.
He also intends to open up the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge for drilling, and he has additional cuts to the Department of Energy and the Interior Department.
Interestingly, at the Department of Energy, they actually get a cut of 5.5%. But the Department of Energy gets a boost on the programs that have to do with militarizing nuclear science. But then it cuts the rest of the department's budget, which includes programs like energy research and development, national laboratories, and radioactive waste disposal. That just days after we had that near catastrophe up in Washington State at the Hanford nuclear site, where they store radioactive waste, and one of the tunnels actually crumbled and collapsed. And yet we're cutting that program. It's madness.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but luckily this is not the final word. Congress will still have quite a bit of say in what the actual final budget will look like.
Indeed, they actually write their budget from scratch, but, you know, the president has the ability to veto whatever Congress sends them. So we may be in for a fight, and it won't be a pretty one.
Melting permafrost at the North Pole last fall ominously flooded an entrance to the global seed vault in Svalbard, Norway. That's the subterranean vault that contains more than 500 million seeds intended to recreate humanity's food supply in case of disaster, like global warming. In a story just made public this week, unseasonably warm temperatures and heavy rains last fall caused water to breach one of the tunnel entrances to the so-called Doomsday Vault. Although officials say the seeds were never in any danger, they say they're taking no chances now and are building new protective measures. Antarctica is going green, literally, and not in a good way. Although plants are still scarce at the South Pole, in the past 50 years, the quantity and rate of growth of plants has shot up sharply. That's according to a new study where scientists used core samples taken from the banks of moss around the Antarctic Peninsula. They say that shows the rate of moss growth at the South Pole is now 4 to 5 times higher than it was in the 1950s, thanks to retreating glaciers opening up new ice-free ground and Antarctica's rapidly warming climate.
Global warming is a hoax. I don't know how many times I have to explain this to you. Never mind the evidence. Everywhere you look.
Finally, some good news.
Oh, well, take your time.
Switzerland has voted to accelerate their country's transition to renewable electricity in a binding referendum vote on Sunday. 58% of the Swiss voted to add a surcharge of about $50 a year to their electric bills to subsidize and speed up deployment of wind and solar energy projects and to modernize their electric grid.
I am so moving to Switzerland. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't fit into today's Green News Report, please stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide while you still can on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All right, I am back, and I think we have Frank Schaefer on the line. Frank, are you there?
And I am.
Ah, there you are. Thank you. Sorry about that. I think we got our times mixed up. Frank Schaefer is with us. I had mentioned earlier the man who grew up. Well, you know what? I told the audience a little bit about you, but it's so much better if you tell your background, who your father was and how you grew up. I mentioned you're an author, you're a screenwriter, you're an artist, you're a movie maker, you're sort of a man of all trades, but you grew up in the family of the founder, one of the founders of the religious right.
Yeah, I mean, just sort of working backward, this afternoon I'm a 64-year-old grandfather of five, father of three grown children, who began his own life, that's me, in Switzerland, of all places, as the son of American parents who were missionaries, evangelical fundamentalist Christians who had gone over to Europe at the end of the war to work in bombed-out cities. And so the first part of my childhood was with very obscure parents. No one had heard of them. And then my dad started to write some books in the late 60s. And all of a sudden, he became a famous evangelical leader. And then, you know, Billy Graham, the evangelist, was visiting us, and Barbara Bush came and stayed at our home as a retreat for a while. And my mom became friends with Betty Ford later and used to hang around the White House. And this obscure little missionary family suddenly was part of a thing that people started calling the religious right. And our issue was the abortion issue. My dad and I made a film series when I was in my early 20s called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, with my father, Francis Schaefer, and Dr. C. Everett Koop, who was Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General, or was a year or so later after we made the film. And that really launched the pro-life movement, as it became known, the anti-abortion movement, in terms of Protestant involvement, evangelical involvement. And so from then on, we were part and parcel with Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, all these other guys, essentially building coalitions to, I guess, bluntly turn the Republican Party into kind of a theocracy, a party of theocracy, a party that was going to impose religious beliefs on Americans through the courts and through law. And I watched this whole process. And then when my dad died in 1984, a few years later, I really had a kind of a change of mind and heart that I talk about in a memoir of mine, one of my books called Crazy for God, and really tell the story about growing up in this family and why I left. But I guess the thumbnail sketch is that I just could not belong to this group of white, oligarch, male-dominated people that tended to disrespect and hate women, tended to disrespect and hate gay people, had founded a whole Christian school movement to circumvent integration, which was really the only reason these movements were founded. And so fast forward today, you know, when I see Betsy DeVos as the education secretary, I knew her family. I raised money from Rich DeVos, who founded Amway and made some film series with my dad back when we were doing that. I know all these people. So my present perspective on Donald Trump and the era we were in is that this is deja vu for me, not Donald Trump, but watching the religious right coalesce around this guy, 81% of evangelical voters backing him, still boosting him, still believing in him, even in the midst of this fiasco, all because they have had this agenda now for close on to 50 years to try to roll the clock back on everything from integration to gay rights to women's rights and all these other things. And having been part of that and having left and become a fierce critic of that movement in my writings, I have a perspective that's a little different from a lot of other Trump critics who really came to this thing later and don't have the perspective of understanding where all this came from. And so that's kind of a long answer, but it gives you an update on what my perspective on current politics is now that the religious right has found this weird, bizarre, very irreligious candidate in Donald Trump and are backing him. But they're backing him because they've never let go of that agenda. The anti-gay agenda, the anti-woman agenda, the anti-black agenda. They've been pounding this now for a long, 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 long time, and they kept failing. And a lot of people thought the culture war was over, but it's not. You know, we've got our own Vladimir Putin because of that culture war. We've got a guy who is essentially a corrupt kleptomaniac who is, you know, had six bankruptcies and funded his business through investment from Russian oligarchs when no bank would touch him. Mm-hmm. We've got this president who is a philanderer, an adulterer, somebody who's run around on numerous women. How many people he's gotten pregnant, we don't know. This is the hero of the religious right. So I'm just awestruck by the irony of the family values crowd embracing this guy. And, you know, that's where we are this afternoon,
right,
Nicole. We're here.
Frank, you know,
that's where we're at.
It is astounding. And it's not only the irony, it's the hypocrisy. You know, all the time, we've had this conversation a number of times where I'm not a religious person. I've never had organized religion as part of my life. And I often marvel at it, but the one thing I thought Christianity was supposed to be based on was the teachings of Christ. And I would often joke in a strange way that I'm more Christian than so many of these so-called Christians who, you know, who wear their Christianity on their sleeve, who talk about it as if it makes them better than everybody else. Yet what we're seeing here is just blatant hypocrisy. Seeing Donald Trump go to this week to the holiest sites in the religious world of the three, you know, major world religions, I found astounding. And of course, that's when I contacted you and said, I need my Frank Schaefer fix.
I mean, all you need to know about Donald Trump's version of Christianity and these white supremacist evangelicals who are supporting him is this: look at the budget he just rolled out.
That's right.
Vast slashing of Medicaid, slashing every service to the poor, including his own poor white voters, by the way, who are out of luck. I mean, they are the ones who are going to get it hardest in the neck if any of this stuff happens. And who's behind all this? Mike Pence, evangelical Christian convert from Roman Catholicism, a dyed-in-the-wool far-right Christian guy who says that, you know, he wants to bring America back to biblical standards. And what's his idea of a biblical standard? It's to embrace the philosophy of Ayn Rand and essentially make the rich richer, the poor poorer, and strip what little medical care and social programs the poor in this country have away by billions and make cuts that's going to literally decimate Medicaid, for instance, and then set his target on Medicare next. All these lies that Donald Trump told to get elected by the underclass, saying he'd protect Medicaid, he'd protect Medicare, he'd protect Social Security. They're attacking the entire social safety net infrastructure. It's the Republican wish list of the last 50, 60 years. He's the guy rolling it out, and Mike Pence is the person behind it. The evangelical that they all just love is literally, literally attacking the poor. So this is where we are, and it's just a really a hell of a mess.
You know, you have a post up. By the way, people can go to frankschaferblog.com. I'll have a link at nicolesandler.com after the show where I post the podcast. But it's frankschaferblog.com. And on the blog page, you have you do Facebook Facebook live posts. And you did a video this morning that was exactly what I wanted to talk with you about. And what you say, it's time to tell the hard truth. All fundamentalist religion is the enemy of peace. Period. Now, so you're not saying all religion is. You're saying all fundamentalist religion is. So what's the difference between organized religion and fundamentalist religion?
Well, they overlap, obviously. These are they're gray areas, but here's a basic thumbnail. If you take the holy books, the Quran, the Bible, whatever, as literal, in the same way that you take a science textbook or a math conclusion or what a physicist tells you about the basic properties of the universe, and you try to base your life on it, you are a fundamentalist. In other words, you are taking a mystical book of fables, myths, stories, sayings, histories, oral traditions retold, and you are trying to actually craft a modern culture out of it and impose this view on others. You are a fundamentalist. So bluntly, if you really believe that the Bible, for instance, as an evangelical, is literally true, as in, yes, all this happened, creation happened in 6 days, there was no evolution, women should be subservient to men because Paul said so in the New Testament, and in the Old Testament you have women being stoned to death if they lost their virginity before marriage. If you buy all this stuff and you say there's nothing to grow past or that we've learned differently or that maybe there are ideas here, for instance, Jesus is teaching about how to treat people that we want to use and we want to adopt and we want to bless other people with, but at the same time not take this literally, then you are free to kind of use your brain, I guess is the way you put it, and still be a religious person if you want to go to church or to a synagogue or a temple or whatever. But the fact of the matter is this fundamentalist takes these words literally and tries to ram them down the throat of modernity in a way that just doesn't work.
So then,
hold on just a second. Yeah.
We're speaking with Frank Schaefer. So, Frank, then, you know, we hear so many of these fundamentalists. And let's talk Mike Pence. Let's talk. I don't know what Donald Trump is. I don't believe anything he says. I don't think he believes any of it. But Mike Pence is one of them. He's one of those religious right guys who's, a true believer. He when he was governor of Indiana, he had a law passed saying that if a woman had a miscarriage, that they would do an investigation into the miscarriage to make sure it wasn't an abortion. If it was an abortion, that you had to have a funeral for the aborted fetal tissue. I mean, things like that. What is the difference between that and Sharia law? Aren't they pushing some sort of Christian Sharia law?
None. Listen, I mean, the irony is intense that Donald Trump goes to Saudi Arabia first in his trip of his international trip. You know, the Saudis, first of all, supplied most of the hijackers to 9/11.
That's
and this
right.
guy is supposed to be trying to be against terror. They have supplied billions of dollars in building mosques and sending imams globally to spread their extreme form of Islam called Wahhabism that has essentially corrupted the Islamic tradition globally. And that if you talk to Muslims in countries all over the world, and I've been at conferences with people like this and been in communication with them, they hate it. They look at the Wahhabist Islamic jihad that the Saudis have launched against them, and essentially what they've tried to do is radicalize Muslims around the world. So Trump goes there, never banned them as part of his travel ban, because he's doing business with them. Mm-hmm. He's building hotels and golf courses with people in the Gulf states and the Saudis, this corrupt grifter family called the Trump clan, including Jared Kushner and his sister who went to China and tried to sell people green cards for $500,000, saying, if you invest in our New Jersey properties, I'll get you a green card. This kind of crap. So, you know, when we talk about hypocrisy, this is the guy who's going to keep you safe. Well, it's not lost on me that he went to this woman-hating country that doesn't allow women to drive, beheads people, flogs women if they appear in public without a headscarf, and so forth and so on. And then he heads off to Israel, which is a country that has its own problems with religion, where fundamentalists Christian Zionists in America support Israel because they think it's key to the return of Christ that Israel exists. Look, this is just one crazy thing after another that is the fruit various forms of fundamentalist religion. And it's not even just the Abrahamic covenant, so-called. Look at what's going on in India right now with Hindu nationalists who are murdering Muslims when they accuse them of eating beef or trafficking in cows. We're in a time of radical resurgence of both white nationalism in Europe and also here in America, but also globally, nationalistic instincts fueled this tribalism, fueled by religion and turning into naked aggression. And so this blog post I had that you referred to, this video blog, basically just lays this out and just says, we cannot tolerate this. You know, we're so used here in America to talking about religious tolerance and live and let live, that we find it difficult to stand up and just say, this is sheer nonsense. It's lies built on lies, and these people are awful, and our political system cannot make room for these opinions. They are outside of the democratic way of thinking because they don't allow for anything except their own absolutist position. And so, you know, it isn't just the states. It isn't just Israel. It isn't just – it's global. But Trump is part of this phenomenon. Of course, he's you know – irreligious himself, but he's very much trying to cash in on it when it comes to fundamentalist American Christianity.
What did you think about his meeting with the Pope this morning?
You know, the whole thing is just top to bottom bullshit. I mean, look at this. It's just crazy. You know, he seesaws from Saudi Arabia to Israel to seeing the Pope to whatever. None of this means squat. What you really have to look at is the budget he just rolled out, which is against the religious teaching if you want to be swing it around the other way. The fundamental religious teaching, the good part of religious teaching, the humanistic part of Christianity and Islam, and the humanistic part of the Hindu traditions, helping the poor, the least of these, humility, all these things that he's just swept away in his march toward power, you know, that would be what we would be needing to hear from these people. So that's what's not happening as they try to curry favor with him.
You know, Frank Schaefer is with us. It was just a couple of weeks ago that Donald Trump gave the commencement address at Liberty University. Did you watch any of that?
You know, I saw clips. I read transcripts and marvel at the way he can't put an English sentence together. But watching the guy for more than a second or two in a clip is very difficult because it's just, you know, it's kind of like trying to walk barefoot over broken glass.
I hear you.
The way it resonates.
I hear. I'm right there with you. But again, it was on and I felt this is what I do for a living. So I felt like I had to at least watch some of it. And I did. And every third sentence, if that, he would turn. Right, Jerry? Everything was Jerry.
Yeah, no. Jerry, listen. Jerry Falwell, his father, Jerry Falwell Sr., lent me his jet. I flew around America in his private jet doing speaking engagements. Like, for instance, I was the keynote speaker at the Southern Baptist Convention. I know the whole family. I knew Jerry Falwell Jr. when he was a kid,
right?
You know, hanging around backstage with his dad and me when I would speak at his college before I bailed and left the whole movement. And this guy is sort of one cut lower than his father. You know, his dad was a segregationist who changed his ways just to keep raising money and fit in. And then he latched onto abortion because he couldn't, you know, bring back Jim Crow. So he decided to keep women down instead. And the fundraising was just as good. His son is a complete fraud. I mean, this is a guy who not only is all about the money and the power, but, you know, here's somebody. Just take one instance. I mean, here's a great idea he had. He encouraged his students to get open carry permits so that they could all be armed with loaded weapons. You know, what could possibly go wrong? A bunch of 21-year-olds, 17,000 21-year-old students running around with loaded firearms. You know, that's a great idea. So, you know, that's the quality of the kind of thinking that he has.
That's frightening. I just, you know, all I could think of was how he was sucking up to Jerry Falwell Jr. throughout the whole speech. It was like he had an audience
right.
of one. Of course, for Donald Trump, he wants an audience of thousands, but the one was there. This Liberty University,
right.
that's another thing that bothers me. A university that has anti-science tendencies, how is that a university?
His science department teaches a creationist view of the universe and places the age of the universe at 10,000 years.
Oh my
there are cave
God.
Paintings in France that are dated at 50,000 years old. You know, the Sumerians were writing before, you know, the universe got created, apparently. I mean, we're talking an anti-intellectualism here. And, you know, in a second, by the way, I have to run.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure I get this one point in. You got to understand something. The evangelical brain death doesn't occur because of Donald Trump. They get this with their mother's milk, as all fundamentalists do. Don't trust the media. It's all the only thing that's true is in the Bible. Hey, we'll homeschool you. We don't want you exposed to those secular educators. Don't go to college. You can't trust university professors. Don't trust anything the New York Times says because, you know, it's run by a bunch of liberal Jews. You know, only trust what your preacher says. Their minds have been groomed to accept alt fact and think that everything else is a liberal conspiracy. So Trump just speaks their language, and he can get away with anything because they put him in the same category as they put the Bible. In other words, it's beyond challenge. It's like basic faith here. So irrespective of the evidence or whatever, anything happens, or the fact that his family is stealing money from the U.S. government and the people of America by basically cashing in on the presidency and inflating the value of Trump hotels and Trump everything, this incredible corrupt government initiative that they're taking in terms of trying to privatize things now for his infrastructure, which is really just a more money to billionaires. You know, touch it wherever you want. Evangelicals could care less because they put it in the category of the Bible. Don't trust the media. Don't trust the schools. Don't trust the experts. Don't trust the colleges. Don't trust even common sense. Don't even trust common sense. Just trust your faith. And so they put him in a faith category, which means they will never change their mind. So I just want to make sure I got that point.
I'm glad you did. One last question then, Frank Schaefer. How do we get around him? How do we get our liberty back?
We work like hell to make sure that the Republican Party is utterly destroyed in the next election reign cycle, and that the House and the Senate come back into the control of sane people. I didn't even say Democrats, just sane people.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know, we pursue the investigations, and all the corruption that is there gets revealed, and he never finishes his first term. I mean, that's it. That's the battle plan. Resist, 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 resist. So that the Republican leadership starts chickening out because they hear the public voice. And then when the next election comes along, just hammer the hell out of them, because these people have sold their country down the river to a buffoon and a complete fraud, and they deserve it. And they really, really, really don't deserve to be in power for generations after that.
No, you got that right. Frank Schaefer, I thank you as always for your time. I know you've got a new book coming out. If people go to the blog, you can read the first chapter of it. What's this one about?
Yes. Well, it's basically a three-year project that I've been working on in terms of just what we need to do when it comes to passing on to future generations something better than this, what we've got. And it really begins with culture, education, children, what we do with our children and grandchildren, family, community. It's the stuff that actually makes the world go round. It isn't the religious fanaticism. It's art, it's culture, it's beauty. And really, I'm arguing for one thing, and that is that certain things have intrinsic value, not because they're good for the economy or make the economy grow or compete with the Chinese, but they have value in themselves. And essentially, beauty is the baseline, and love is the baseline, and it's everything that the Republican Party doesn't represent now. So it's kind of my answer to that far-right, crazy Republican movement. And the book is called Letter to Lucy, A Manifesto for Creative Redemption in the Age of Trump and Lies. And it's a project that's going to be on iBook first because it's a multimedia thing and it'll be out in September. But right now people can read a free chapter on my blog site.
Awesome. And again, I will have a link to it from my blog. Frank Schaefer, it's great talking with
you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
All
bye.
Right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Frank Schaefer. I'm glad we got him. I told you. I promised you once you heard from him, you would know him. Frank Schaefer. He's written at least a dozen books easily. Some are nonfiction, like Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Help Found the Religious Right, and Live to Take All or Almost All of It Back. That's his autobiography. Then he wrote Sex, Mom, and God. He grew up in a weird family. I will tell you that. Obviously it made him the person that he is today, but he had a strange upbringing. I can't even imagine. His father, Francis Schaefer, was known, and again, this is so far removed from everything that I know and understand about religion, about the world, but his father was basically the Pope of the religious right movement of, you know, the forerunners to you know what? It's a world so far removed from me. I can't even tell you. We've got like 5 minutes left. So feel free to call in 954-889-6410 is the number. 954-889-6410. You can Skype into Nicole Sandler. What do you think about Trump's travels around the world? You know, now he's left the Vatican and now he's headed to the NATO meeting and the G7 summit. I don't know. He thoroughly embarrassed me. You know, in the wake of, oh, I know what I wanted to talk to Frank about that I didn't get a chance to ask him about. And that was the bombing in Manchester, which, by the way, they've arrested the bomber's younger brother in Libya, who was planning another bombing. These are people who have hijacked a religion. As little as I know about organized religion, I do know that Islam has laws against murder. I know that the average Muslim, the average American Muslim, is as horrified by this as you and I are. The average Muslim around the world is as horrified by these actions and by these people hijacking their religion and using it as an excuse to murder innocent people. And in this case, their children. Ariana Grande, who actually lives not far from here, she lives in Boca Raton, Florida, apparently. You know, she was a Disney star or a Nickelodeon star. And so a lot of her following are young girls. They're teeny boppers. They're, you know, they're preteens and teenagers. And that's who they were setting out to kill with this bombing. And it's just so horrific. This is what I equate with Mike Pence. Mike Pence, who wants to take food out of the mouths of babes, take health care away from children, take health care away from adults, from old people. You know, the reason Social Security was set up was so that old people didn't have to eat dog food or cat food, which many of them do now, or did before Social Security came in. And we're going to go back to those days. That is a lack of concern for basic human right to exist. And it's just disgusting. Hi, who's this? Calling from the 205 area code.
This is Proud Scal.
Hey, Proud Scal. Proud Scal from the chat room. Nice to hear your voice.
Yes, it is. I was just really listening to Frank Schaefer and really appreciate you bringing him on the show.
I'm glad he was there. I've had a hell of a week so far, haven't I?
Yes, it is. I am just calling to comment that I think it's a good idea if the people that are doing the investigation against Trump connect the dots to most of the administration figures as much as possible to the Russians, because of the fundamentalists are really so anti-communist. I've lived in Alabama and I moved from California and New York before here.
All right, we got like a minute left, so get to the point real quick.
I'm saying to convert these people through this thinking, it would really help exposing the Russians and the connection to the communist government.
Yeah, see that. Thank you for the call, Proud Scale. It's great to talk to you. That's the thing that doesn't make any sense. These people are anti-communist, as you say. They're anti-Russian, and yet they don't say a peep about all the smoke that's out there. You know what they say, when there's smoke, there's fire. In this case, there's a hell of a lot of smoke. Nothing makes sense anymore. It's opposite world. All right, tomorrow, Howie Klein's back. Tomorrow is also Election Day in Montana. Let's get Rob Quist elected, shall we? Thanks for listening. Sorry for all the problems today. Tomorrow will be a better day. I promise. right. I know we did it at the top of the show, but I'll leave you again with what's news. Oh, tomorrow will be a better day. Oh, yeah. All right. See you tomorrow. Thanks again, everyone. Bye.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Former CIA Director John Brennan testified before the House Intelligence Committee on Tuesday that he personally warned Russia last summer against interfering in the U.S. presidential election. He said he was so concerned about Russian contacts with people involved in Donald Trump's campaign that he convened top counterintelligence officials to focus on them.
I've studied Russian intelligence activities over the years and have seen it, again, manifest in many different of our counterintelligence cases and how they have been able to get people, including inside of CIA, to become treasonous. And frequently, individuals who go along that treasonous path do not even realize they're along that path until it gets to be a bit too late.
Congressman Trey Gowdy asked about possible collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign. I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know. But I know that there was a sufficient basis of information and intelligence that required further investigation by the Bureau to determine whether or not U.S. persons were actively conspiring, colluding with Russian officials.
Brennan also noted that U.S. intelligence agencies had concluded Russia's goals were to undermine public faith in the U.S. democratic process, denigrate Secretary Clinton, and harm her electability and potential presidency, and to help President Trump's chances.
It should be clear to everyone that Russia brazenly interfered in our 2016 presidential election process and that they undertook these activities despite our strong protests and explicit warning that they not do so.
Our ability to choose our elected leaders as we see fit is, I believe, an inalienable right that we must protect with all of our resources and all of our authority and power. And the fact that the Russians tried to influence that election so that the will of the American people was not going to be realized by that election, I find outrageous and something that we need to, with every last ounce of devotion to this country, resist.
The Trump administration Tuesday released its 2018 budget called A New Foundation for American Greatness. Although presidents' budgets are usually dead on arrival, this one is particularly heinous in its cuts to safety net and other programs for the poor and elderly, medical research, environmental protection, and more. John McCain and Lindsey Graham both weighed in.
Senator, can I ask you about the president's budget? Is it dead on arrival?
Yes. And the commitment to rebuilding the military cannot be fulfilled with this level of spending.
Well, yes, definitely dead on arrival. This budget, if fully implemented, would require us to retreat from the world diplomatically or put people at risk. You have a lot of Benghazis in the making. This thing became law.
The president continued his first overseas trek at the Vatican Wednesday morning, meeting with the Pope, of whom he had previously noted,
for a religious leader to question a person's faith is disgraceful. No leader, especially a religious leader, should have the right to question another man's religion or faith.
Ahead of today's meeting, it's been a contentious relationship between the president and the Pope. During the campaign last year, the Pope said, quote, a person who thinks about building walls wherever they may be and not building bridges is not a Christian. Trump responded at a campaign rally and on Facebook suggesting if ISIS attacked the Vatican, the Pope would be relieved that the U.S. had a strong president.
This time it was respectful, with Trump giving the Pope a first edition set of Martin Luther King Jr.'s writings, including all five of his books, plus a piece of granite from the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Stone of Hope statue in Washington, D.C., and a bronze sculpture named Rising Above, which the White House said represents hope for a peaceful tomorrow. In return, Pope Francis gave Trump three of his writings, which he typically gives to heads of state, including his 2015 encyclical calling for climate change action and this year's World Day of Peace message about nonviolence, telling Trump, quote, I signed it personally for you. Both of those particularly important as Trump's budget calls for huge cuts to climate change programs and huge increases in military spending. Noting that Trump had visited the world's three holiest religious sites, Stephen Colbert had the perfect guest on his program Tuesday night.
Lord, how do you feel about Trump going to all these holy sites around the world?
I don't know. You pray with three major religions in 1 week? Seems a little needy. Come on, buy a got a drink first.
Well, the president was praying to you at the Western Wall in Jerusalem yesterday. Can you tell me what he prayed for?
Oh, sorry, Stephen. Unlike some people, I don't give away top secret information from Israel.
Still, Lord, you're getting a lot of attention this week. It must feel pretty special.
Oh, not at all, Stephen. This whole thing's just a distraction from the Russia scandal. I mean, Trump even asked me if I could get James Comey to stop the FBI investigation.
Really? Wow. Are you gonna?
No. Even if I wanted to help, I can't. You know, separation of church and state. Plus, I really want to see that pee tape.
So,
come on, everybody knows it's real.
Don't know. So,
no, I do.
If you appreciate these What's News reports, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. The Nicole Sandler Show and What's News are 100% listener funded, and we depend on you to help us keep going. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The fault. We believe that all men are created equal.
To the magnificent mosaic that is America.
From radio beacon to radio beacon.
I have a dream today.
Change has come to America.
Believe it.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
It's a figment of your imagination.
Randy Rhoads Show. Turn.